Today, it's going to be a two-part sermon. Several of the other sermons I've given in marriage have spoken primarily to the men, but today I'm going to speak to the ladies, and then we'll come back and beat the men up next time. The next time I speak, I won't be speaking here for a while because we're going to have a guest speaker next week and so forth. But so we'll be speaking to the ladies today, and try to cover from both sides. I know some of you are not married, some of you are. But still the principles are applied there. And I think they may help you to understand certain things. And even some of these principles can cross over into relationships with each other in the congregation. We'll try to bring those points up as we go along here today. Now, much of the information I'm getting for this sermon is from a book called Love and Respect. We first heard about it because somebody mentioned it and one of our kids said, "Oh, we got that." And another one of our kids said, "Oh, we got that too." And then Amanda says, "Well, Eric got that." So I figured I better get it, figure out what's in it, since all the kids have it. But during the feast, well, on the way down there, Lisa bought the CD of it, because it's just easier than trying to read it. So we listened to it, and we got down to the part that where the man is supposed to listen to a certain part. Oh, that's fine. Of course, I rolled the window down and couldn't hear any of that. But anyway, so this is the part that the man's supposed to hear. Then we got into the room and had brought my little radio and CD player with a headset. And I'd wake up in the morning, that headset would be on playing the part that the man's supposed to know. And then we get in the car and she'd plop that headset on my head, plug it in. Not really, but it's a good joke. And on the way to church, he would have right on the part that the man's supposed to listen to. Then I wake up the next morning, the headset on my head again, listen to the part that the man's supposed to be learning. Now, I'm not dumb. I know exactly. So I thought, she's trying to tell me something. I wonder what it is. And being the typical man, I figured it out all by myself. Yep, I figured out she wants me to buy her a new headset. The women are going, "I'll kill him. I'll kill him." Anyway, you ever been in a crazy cycle in your marriage? You ever been in a crazy cycle in your marriage where things just, you wonder, how did this happen? You start out with a simple discussion, and next thing you know, you're mad at each other, and you figure, what happened here? We're in a crazy cycle. And I think every marriage has been in a crazy cycle, and some of them are more than others. And actually get the same kind of thing with childbearing, but I don't want to get off on that yet. But in childbearing, you get into a crazy cycle in childbearing because each person doesn't understand the needs of the other person. But let's say with the marriage part, almost all marriages problems revolve around not understanding this cycle. There's a crazy cycle in marriage, or we could say in relationships in general. And let's go to Ephesians 5:33. We won't be quoting a lot of verses here today. And when I heard this material, I thought, well, you know, I just hadn't really focused on that to the degree that we will be today. And there's been lots and lots of studies done, you know, lots of money spent on various studies. And, you know, they find out that there's two things in marriages, in order to have a happy marriage, that need to be emphasized, and that is love and respect. And they spent years studying that stuff. And yet it's been right here in the Bible, and we've seen it kind of overread it, as I have, to the degree that we're talking about it here today. So Ephesians 5 and verse 33. Ephesians 5 and verse 33. Verse 32 says, "This is a great mystery." We'll come back in more detail in a minute. "But I am speaking concerning Christ and the church. A relationship between man and a woman represents and pictures the ideal relationship between Christ and the church." And we'll come back to that in a minute. But look at verse 33. "Nevertheless, that each one of you in particular so love his own wife." So that's instructions to the man. There's the love. So we're to love our wife as ourselves. "And let the wife see that she respects her husband." So love and respect. We'll be emphasizing for the ladies here the aspect of respect. And again, the reason I'm doing the ladies today is because other sermons we've talked a lot about men and how they should handle things. And the next time I speak on the subject, we'll beat up on the men. But not really. But we'll give you some instructions there. But really what happens is, in this cycle that happens in marriages, is that we forget that a woman needs to feel loved, and a man needs to feel respected. And when neither one of them, or one doesn't feel that, or neither one of them feels that, you get into this cycle. Because you don't feel respected or you don't feel loved, and so forth. And that's really what we'll be talking about today. Women will often ask, when we're in counseling sessions or they talk among themselves or they think this way, does my husband love me like I love him? Because a woman thrives off that sense of being loved. And a man tends to assume that that's already known. You know, I'll let you know. I told you I loved you 20 years ago, and if that changes, I'll let you know. But a woman doesn't function that way. Her mind is not wired that way at all. She usually will criticize and complain and try to motivate him to stop being unloving. And now you think, oh, wait a minute, that's just counterintuitive. How can you not love me? If you love me, you talk to me more. If you talk to me more, then I know you love me. And what's that doing? That's just driving him back. Because he feels disrespected. He's not feeling respected. So what happens? You get into this cycle. And again, child rearing, getting into the same thing. I think you see some principles there as well. Now, that's not her goal. Her goal is to draw you closer to her and to say, talk to me. But in effect, the way the man, if he feels disrespected by that approach, he backs off. When a woman criticizes her husband in an attempt to try to motivate him to speak and become and not to be so unloving, and I read in this book, I love this phrase, it's like selling brass knuckles to Mother Teresa. He doesn't know what to do with that except pull back. And yet, a woman is, by her nature, she wants to communicate. She wants that. She needs that. And she goes about it the wrong way, trying to get him to talk. We'll give some other examples as we go through that. Most men don't ask the question, does she love me like I love her? He just assumes that's the case, but he usually says, yeah, she loves me, but she's usually mad at me, and I don't know why. And she says, you don't know why? What's the matter with you? And there we go, the crazy cycle again. We're back to that crazy cycle. Because now she's saying, you mean you don't know why? And he's saying, and most men, not a clue. Except me, of course, I'm that rare example. No, sometimes I'm just as dumb as a clock. Men can be that way. We're not relational by our nature. And she is. And if she wants you to be relational, in her desperation to be relational, she sort of almost, from a man's perspective, attacks you to talk to her. I don't want to talk to you. Kind of go back in the corner there, take a cold shower, do something. Then maybe we can talk. And you don't want to talk to me. Well, not like that. And then, see the cycle? That's the cycle we get into. And I think we need to understand, we're talking about two people who have good natures, if you will. They have good intentions. They want to do what's right. But they don't realize they get stuck in this cycle. They get in this cycle of showing lack of love from a man's perspective and a lack of respect from a woman's perspective. And we'll talk about that as we go through here, especially with the ladies. And then we'll talk to the men as we go through this next time as well. Sometimes when a man feels attacked, and again, she doesn't see that as an attack. She's saying it as approaching him, talk to me. Let's sit down. And it's too much for him that way. It's too much for him. He will begin just to withhold love towards her. He won't talk to her. He'll kind of put a little distance between, because he's feeling like, I'm being attacked. And that's not her intent. She's saying, talk to me. It's like, I'm dying of thirst. Talk to me. Relate to me. So what he does is he withdraws. And that makes it even worse. Now she doesn't feel loved. And so she shows him more disrespect by the way she responds. Again, I don't think either person is deliberately doing that. It's a trap to get into. So he responds by withholding love to her. Well, if you withhold, again, another analogy this author brought up, if he's withholding love from her, that's like selling a pickup to an Amish farmer. What is he going to, Amish farmer, they don't drive cars, in case you don't get the analogy. Okay. Let's go back to Ephesians 5:33. We haven't really left there yet. And look what it says here. Nevertheless, each one of you in particular so love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. This is, a scripture showing what is unconditional love. So let's speak to the ladies today. Let's go to 1 Peter 3. 1 Peter 3. Now, if you're a man, you're saying, boy, I hope she listens to this, because boy, don't do that. Because next time I speak, well, I hope she's listening, or what did I do? The opposite. See, that's that cycle business again. We're going to blame the other one. And really, the whole point is we don't realize we get into this destructive cycle. And that's what we're trying to show you here today. 1 Peter 3 and verse 1. 1 Peter 3. Likewise, you wives, in verse 1, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by your conduct, by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. What does all that mean? Let me read from a modern translation. This is from the Contemporary Jewish Bible. I think it phrases it pretty well. Verse 1 through 6 is what we'll be reading. And I just kind of like the way it phrases it. In the same way, wives, submit to your husbands, so that even if some of them do not believe the word, or maybe temporarily they're not living by it, if I can just interject that, because they don't have understanding yet, they will be won over by your conduct without your saying anything. Well, now that begins to this issue of respect. And this is an act of faith. Some of you have unbelieving mates. We've come to a point within the church, for example, now. I don't think we have anybody here that fall under this category. But maybe you married somebody who was in the faith, and then with the split in the church, now they don't believe anymore. They just don't believe that anymore. So you sort of come under that category. But we do have some. I know a pastor's wife. She says, I came in as a single lady, became a pastor's wife, then he left, and now I'm a wife of an unbeliever. She's gone the full cycle. Isn't that amazing? So anyway, verse 2, as they see your respectful and pure behavior. So they're talking about that thing of respect. What we saw in the Bible says the word respect. We'll get into that in just a little bit more as we go through. This issue of respect for the husband is important. Well, yeah, but my husband's an idiot. And if you were married to my idiot husband, how could you possibly respect this guy? Okay. Can you hear a cycle? See? Because he's not responding in the correct way, which makes it worse. Well, if you don't show me respect, we don't say those words, but in essence, if you don't show me respect, I'm not going to show you any affection. Oh, yeah? If you're not going to show me affection, well, there we go. There's that cycle again. And we go into that cycle. And we can't figure out what's wrong. So we'll try to do that as we go through here. Verse 3, your beauty should not consist of externals such as fancy hairstyles. They used to have hairstyles. If you look at some of the old Roman pictures and stuff, these women would have long, long hair, and they'd have them all set up. They'd have bird cages inside sitting on top of their heads. Any bird cages? No. But that was considered really beautiful, all this stuff and all this intricate nonsense going on in the hair. But that's not real beauty. It's not gold or jewelry or what you wear. Rather, let it be the inner character of your heart, which is imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit. I just love when I see a woman who has that gentle and quiet spirit, very feminine, she has a very soft and gentle spirit. A man can't resist that. Because it's really built in him to seek that and to look for it. And yet, when you're in a relationship that you're getting hurt, that is just seen as a huge vulnerability. Brother. No way am I going to do that. See, that's that cycle. We need to learn how to break that. We'll talk about that as we go through here. Boy, if I'm a quiet and gentle spirit, he would stomp me in the ground. Well, we'll see. And now again, if he's evil-hearted and evil-intended, has an evil intent, he could do that. But if he's just an average male, forgive him. He doesn't know what he's doing. You know, like Jesus said. And there's things that you do that you don't know you're doing. And it keeps that cycle going. In God's sight, last part of verse 4, this is of great value. And it gets sold more and more because you don't see that. Even, I'm sorry to say, even in the church, you don't see it much. Not like you would have. Femininity is not taught and emphasized anymore. True femininity. It's just not. Verse 5. This is how the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to adorn themselves and submit to their husbands. Their real beauty was in how they learned how to live and respect their husband. See? The way that Sarah obeyed Abraham, honoring him as her Lord, now not as God, but as her head. And we'll talk about that as we go through here. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not succumb to fear. See, it's fear. I just love that translation in those verses. Don't fear being that quiet and gentle spirit. Because if you have a man who is a typical guy, he doesn't connect to these emotional things like most men don't. Yeah, we're a little slow coming to the party, but we eventually get there. If he's just a general human being and a male human being in that way, and he's not evil-hearted, he'll learn from that. He'll see that. And if you understand your husband isn't evil-hearted, he's not trying to be destructive to the relationship. He just doesn't. He's not clued in yet. I said I was going to talk about the men, but I guess I am a little bit. Then, if he's evil-hearted, then it's not going to work. And eventually it will end. But really what we're saying here is that a man will open his heart, or once he begins to open his heart to God, he will reopen his spirit to his wife. So that's one thing here to keep in mind. Again, I said this, I'll say it again. Remember that our mates don't intend to be disrespectful or unloving. Your wife doesn't intend to be disrespectful. Now, she may be. We'll get back to the ladies. And your husband doesn't intend to be unloving. I'll give you a couple stories. Again, it was in this book. I thought it was a very good one. So simple. And you think, because you're not probably, you don't have this issue, so you're not connected to it emotionally. This author of this book, he writes a story. He hates pepper on his eggs in the morning. Now, this is a huge issue that the whole universe will hinge on. She thinks you can't have good eggs without pepper on. He says, baby, don't put pepper on my eggs. Every morning. Why are you disrespecting me? To her, she's not even thinking. It's an unconscious reaction. She's not trying to be disrespectful. To her, eggs aren't fit to eat without lots of pepper. To him, he hates them. Now, they can get into this self-destructive cycle. If you listen to me and won't be rebellious to my authority in this household, I'm the head in this household, what is your problem? Well, you don't love me, do you? Well, I'm just trying to cook your breakfast for you, and all you can do is break, blah, 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 blah. Here we go in that cycle. We're back in that cycle. Instead, he's chosen to believe, and does believe, that it's just habitual. She doesn't even know. So what he did, he learns to eat it with the pepper, and he says, baby, next time, oh, I forgot again. Don't get into that self-destructive cycle. You don't love me because you put pepper on my eggs. And you and I think, wow, ridiculous. What's your pepper and egg story? We all have our pepper and egg story. I hear sometimes I do this. Do you know what a hanger is? Yeah, it's a little thing that you put in the closet. Yeah, look at the hanger in your closet. Yeah, there's nothing on them. Why is that? Well, I didn't want to wear out the hangers. She's laughing. Because sometimes I'm trying to do better. I have a bed in my office. It's a great closet. You know, I come home after a long day, especially after Sabbath. The suit ends up either on the fan, the big fan. I don't want to wear out that hanger. How many of you guys do that? One true man in the congregation. Okay. And my wife, she's learned he's not trying to show disrespect by, because she knows that I should know that drives her nuts. But I'm tired and I don't want to do it. And I'm better usually Sunday. I do it. Well, okay, Monday sometimes I do it. I'll put it back up because she says it's all wrinkly. Now we've got to take it to the dry cleaners. But what are you trying to run my life for? Can I just put up my own suits without you lecturing to me to use the cycle? Or say, you know what, she loves me, she wants the best, and what's the big deal about that? And she can say, it's not a big deal to me. Why am I going to, this is not the hill I'm going to die on. It's not worth arguing over. Let's stay out of that cycle. And so one thing you can do, like what I'm going to do, and I'm trying to do, is when I go home, it sits on the bed for about an hour, or two or three, or maybe four. But I eventually put it up, and she doesn't say anything, but I'm saying, oh good. We didn't have to do this cycle business. I'm not trying to disrespect her, and she's not trying to disrespect me. But if you're married to a neat freak, they drive you nuts. And you drive them nuts because everything has to be just right. And I won't ask this, but some of you, I dare say, have your clothes color coordinated in your drawers. I would drive you stark raving mad. If they're in the drawer, my wife's happy with me. So then we got back from the feast. I'm standing by the drawer. She's tossing the undershirts and the underwear and the socks. Boom, boom. I'm happy with that. No. The others, it's going to be, and there must be a style to that. I don't know what goes next to blue. I'm guessing red. Then maybe red. There must be a trend. I don't know. But can you imagine if you marry somebody who's a neat freak and you're not? But if you love me, you put stuff up. Well, if you love me, you wouldn't be badgering me all the time. But what's the matter with you? Do we live in a pigsty? What? Is this not good enough? Why are you talking to me like that? And here we are in this cycle. See, and we laugh at it because it's really silly, but it becomes major in our homes. And understand that your mate, whoever the neat freak is, whoever the other one, you know, if you're a neat freak, that's a slob. And if one who's a slob probably isn't a slob, just a normal human being, and you're a little bit too much the other way or whatever. Just realize, is this a hill I want to die on? It's not worth it. Let's break that cycle. You can say, you know, baby, the suit went, usually it's on Sunday, sometimes Monday, I hang it up. And that's like a little victory for me. It's a victory for her too because she didn't have to say anything. Isn't it? It's little, isn't it? But why get into that cycle? See, why get into that cycle? All right, let's see if you can figure out. One person in the relationship looks through pink glasses and pink hearing aids. Who do you think that is? Okay. And another person in the relationship listens through blue hearing aids and blue glasses. All right, let me give you an example of that. And I have done this, not with Lisa, but with a young lady I was dating back when I first came in the church. It was her, I don't know, because we didn't observe birthdays. Anyway, I think it was a little card kind of celebrate. I thought my intent was, she probably doesn't even know this story, but my intent was to sort of celebrate our first month that we've known each other. I don't remember her name now, but anyway. Anyway, the woman remembered everything about this, and I just kind of remember the overview. I got her a card. I think, hey, you're doing good, man. I heard that sermon. It was a birthday card instead of an anniversary card. And she was lived up in Canada. I lived in Washington. So I sent it to her. Pretty soon she did write. She wrote back, well, thank you for the card. But I mean, you may not have noticed it was a birthday card, not an anniversary card. Well, okay, dummy. There you go. But she kind of had enough sense to know I meant right by it. So I didn't mean to. But some women, when they see that, depending on the other issues in the marriage, they will see it. Open the card. In fact, he talks about the author did this. The author did this. He forgot anniversaries. I have not done that yet. Okay? So anyway, give me time. The author talks about where he did this. He, 10th anniversary, and he had forgotten other anniversaries. He got her a card. And it turned out to be a birthday card instead of an anniversary card. And her response was, first of all, look at it. She's so happy. Remembered her anniversary and opens it up and her face just falls. Because it was a birthday card. She says, our relationship isn't even important enough for you to look at what kind of card it is. And he's saying, what? See? She felt unloved. Now, he feels disrespected. And they ended up spending him on the couch, she in the bed. Great anniversary. Because that cycle got started. Okay, she can say, you know what, this kind of thing, he was really trying. He actually went and got a card. We'll give him points for that. And he's not trying to be not caring towards it. He just was careless. And it's not because he doesn't care about the relationship. But that's how she saw it through her pink glasses. And that's how she perceived it. And he's perceiving, I think I did pretty good just getting this thing. You know what it cost? No, he wouldn't say that. But see that cycle, and it's usually over trivia. But that trivia shows an underpinning problem. Underpinning where they don't feel loved, they don't feel respected. See, the simple instruction, see to it that she respect her husband and that he love her. A woman, do I understand this totally? No. Because I'm a man, I'm still learning. And all of us men, if you're honest with yourself, you're learning the same process. A woman thrives on love. And a man says, well, yeah, I love you. Why do I have to keep telling you that? Because it's in her hard wiring. She must hear it and see it and sense it and feel it. And a man, it's in his hard wiring to feel respected and honored for what he is and what he does. All right, let's move on. All right, pink ears, blue ears. I don't have a thing to wear. Pink ears, pink perspective, I don't have anything new to wear. Blue eyes and perspective, I don't have anything clean to wear. You said the same words, but perceived differently through your vision. So I kind of kid with my wife, especially during the feast or something like that. She will have in her mind what she's going to wear and what suit I should wear. Do you know when I start thinking about what suit I'm going to wear? When I open the door and see what's in front of me. I don't care what I'm going to wear. She's been thinking about it for days. And she wants us to match. And it's kind of kidding, and I appreciate it. So I say to her, well, baby, what have I been thinking about wearing this week? And she says, you're going to wear that suit. Now, I can say, well, you're trying to run my life. You're trying to tell me what to do. No, and I understand that is important to her, and it's not a big deal to me. And it is to her, and I can show her that I want to love her and respect her in that way. And she knows what's going on. She knows the dynamics after 30 years. Okay, I'm advanced. I didn't even know that colors matched until I met her. And I literally, again, like, I don't have anything to wear because everything. I don't have anything clean. That was the way I thought. See? Anyway, so you understand how different we are. Again, I want to say the real issues. See, many times in marriage counseling, say they'll bring up this issue or this issue or this issue or this issue. Those are what they call presenting issues in a counselor perspective. But that's not the issue at all. It's a symptom of the issue. And we're trying to get down to that symptom of the issue. Is she doesn't show him respect and he's not showing her love. And they're both starving to death in the relationship. They're starving to death. And as they starve, they become more desperate. Why won't you love me? Why won't you respect me? Why are you jumping on me all the time? Why won't you love me? Why don't you be gentle? Why don't you talk to me? Okay. All right, I'll talk to you. What do I want to talk about? Oh, you just shut her down again. See? All right, we'll get into that. 1 Peter 3 now. Back to that again. 1 Peter 3, verse 7. 1 Peter 3, verse 7. Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as the weaker vessel. We've talked about that. Emotionally, A woman is more tender, and that's, it's beautiful in a way. It really is. They're much more tender and emotional. I've used the analogy, and I think this author does too. View a woman like a fine crystal. Like a fine crystal. And a man, you can view him more as just regular glass. Not that he doesn't have feelings, but he's not as vulnerable. So she's very vulnerable in that way. She must feel loved. And not just, you have to assume it. And I don't always do that perfectly, and you guys don't either. So, but we learn from these things. They must feel it. So they're more, that's why I say the weaker vessel, not inferior. But they're much more vulnerable in that sense, emotionally. As being, and then think of her as an heir together of the grace of life. She is as just as much as a converted human being as you are. See? That your prayers may not be hindered. So fellows, again, we've mentioned this before, the way we treat our wives, God will and won't answer many of our prayers based on how we treat her. It's very important that we treat her right if you want to have your prayers answered. Because that's part of being a head. That's what partly what it means to be the leader. Matthew 18:22. Matthew, go to Acts. That's pretty close. Matthew. If you know Matthew 18, you know what we're going to be talking about. The theme kind of is all there. Matthew 18, verse 22. Talk about how many times did you forgive? And this is in and outside marriage. But since this is about marriage, let's talk about this. They asked, how many times should you forgive? And Jesus said, I do not say to you up to seven times, but 70 times seven. It's an attitude of forgiveness. It's an attitude, that approach of attitude of forgiveness. Now, when you speak to the ladies about submission, as we do, you can see it was some, the body language is already there. I don't think I can. I can't trust him. I can't trust him with my emotions and feelings. And I don't know what to do. This is a hard sermon to hear because I don't think I can trust him. Because if I do, I'll get crushed one more time and I can't handle it. So it's very difficult, and I understand that. But that's, we're talking about that issue of forgiveness. And the issue of, are you living with a person of goodwill? You may be living with a man who doesn't know, or living with a wife who doesn't know. But your wife isn't trying, and your husband isn't trying, to deny you love or respect. They just stuck in this cycle and they don't know how to get out of it. Because I'm assuming everybody here are people of goodwill. And you're not inherently evil at the core. No, we're just human beings. Let's go to Colossians 3:13. Colossians is a deep book, by the way, if you've not really studied it. I'm sure it has to be from the Greek perspective, too. A lot of deep stuff in Colossians. Colossians 3 and verse 13. And again, this is in the church, but also we're going to, the principle applies. In a way, aren't we all kind of married to each other in the congregation in a loose way? We're a family, okay? Sometimes you're closer to others than you are other folks in the congregation. And some personalities just kind of against yours. So what do you do? Well, whenever you see that person you don't like, you kind of slap them alongside the head and say, get away from me. Or is that what we do? No. What do we do? Same thing we have in marriage. Verse 13, bearing with one another, and forgiving one another, if anyone has complained against another, even as Christ forgave you, you must also do. This happens again in marriage. And what happens here? But above all these things, put on love. That's guys want to show that. And we want to show it for both sides, obviously, both women and men. Which is the bond of perfection and maturity. This is a way to maturity. I'll show you a verse here pretty quickly that God created the human relationship between man and wife to be one of tension. Say, what? See, when you first fall in love, oh, he's perfect. You know he's not. She's perfect. No, she isn't. And you'll find that out later on. Because there's tension built in. And in the marriage relationship, God wants us to learn how to resolve issues. How to apply godly love, godly principles in a very personal way. So there is that principle is there. Let's go to Isaiah 54:6. Isaiah 54:6. For woman is for the Lord has called you like a woman forsaken and grieved in spirit. Remember, I said this for some ladies, it's very difficult for them to hear a sermon about trusting and again kind of reaching out to this husband who doesn't seem to have a clue how to love you. And he doesn't seem to have a clue how to I'm sorry. Yeah, he doesn't know how to love you and you don't know how to respect him because you don't feel the reciprocal response. It's Isaiah 54:6. For the Lord, has called you like a woman forsaken and grieved in spirit. And there are ladies who are like that. Like a youthful wife when you were refused. No, you're crushed. God has called Israel when it was crushed. God will, and again, God's going to do that after the tribulation. Israel, the nation, is crushed and humbled, and her spirit is crushed. And now God will begin to call them and bring them. But I just quoted that to show you that many times a woman's spirit is crushed by her man. And he doesn't mean to. He doesn't mean to. He just doesn't understand the cycle. He doesn't understand your need, and you don't understand his need. And it's just this vicious cycle business that goes on. Let's talk about an acronym, CHAIRS. CHAIRS. We'll talk about this now for the rest of the sermon. We'll be specifically talking to the ladies. Remember I said God built into relationship tension, so we learn these things. 1 Corinthians 7:28 tells us flat out, it's right there. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 28. Paul, of course, says he thought it would be best that people don't marry at all during that time. There's a lot of persecution on the church. At this time in his ministry, he also thought the end of the age was imminent. But also there was great persecution. So it's very difficult to add a relationship into that. And for him, he's constantly traveling. And he thought, I'm sure he thought to himself, what woman in her right mind would want to be traveling 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or on the road all the time and never have a place to lay your head? So he was completely consumed with his work. But here's what he says here, 1 Corinthians 7, verse 28. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 28. But even if you do marry, because he knows most people will, you've not sinned if you marry, even though I think you're better off not getting married. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Nevertheless, such will have trouble in the flesh. A relationship has built-in trouble. Because we don't understand this cycle. Where do we go here? Verse 28. I'm looking at 29. We'll have trouble in the flesh, but I will spare you that. There's enough other issues going on. But you're married, and you know what? You're going to have trouble in your marriage from time to time. And you know what? That's not bad. You learn to work through them. And this is developing godly character with you. Do you think God ever has to be patient with you? Do you think God wants a relationship with you? And when he called you and me, did he think, when I called in this case, Tom, or when I call whoever you are, from the moment of conversion, this relationship will be one constant nirvana. Everything between us will just be great. No, God knows in our relationship with him, there's going to be problems. We call them sin. And God knew that going into it. That's why he's very patient with us. He's very patient with us. So again, there it's normal we're going to find that. Let's talk to the ladies here. One thing that ladies don't understand about men is that first letter C in the acronym CHAIRS. C means a man has a desire for conquest. He wants to win at what he does. They want to achieve. And a man who doesn't have that worries me. Somehow that has been bred out of him, taught out of him. But most men, okay, couple. How many wives are computer widows? My wife will raise her hand sometimes. Because if you are working on the computer, you will conquer this issue. Now, maybe if you have to be a lot smarter than I am. If you're a programmer or whatever, line 8,656,000,000, there's one line wrong in this program, and I will find it. What is my wife's name? How many children do I have? Okay, that's... Or, I have a job. I got to get this job done. I don't have time. Why do you have to get this job done now? Why don't you come home and have supper? I can't. I got to get this job done. Why are you trying to hand-peck me all the time? I've got work to do. Leave me alone. Well, see, now we're in that cycle. You don't love me. Well, you don't show me respect. Don't you know I got to work for a living? How do you think we're going to get a meal on the table every night? She's saying, but I got to cook whatever you can afford to bring home. And now you won't even eat that. See? Here we go. Over silly things. If you understand your man has a desire to achieve and to conquer, it's in him. You understand that? He's not trying to neglect you. Whether he's a computer guy or he's a guy out there pouring cement or framing a house or you name it. And again, in my work, especially in the early years, I was never home. That was bad. I was wrong on my part. Partly I was training with others who were never home. Sadly, only one of them is in the church now. And now my wife used to cry. She said, "Well, I never see you. When are we going to be together?" Well, see, and I was happy conquering my new job, my new career. What are you crying about? Of course, I wasn't quite that cold. But and she needed to feel loved. Well, yeah, I do. See you at 2 o'clock in the morning, because that's usually when I get home, and leave at 6 the next morning. I was in my 20s, I could do that. But the first 2 years then, I was never home. There were days I didn't see my son, Brian. Of course, he'll hear about this too. That explains a lot about him, doesn't it? No, he's a character. And so you look at his Facebook, you see that. But there's just times when I didn't see him. See? So you have to learn that balance. Now she cries. She says, "When are you leaving? Don't you have somewhere to go?" Anyway, so it's kind of a life cycle of that too, isn't that? I'm just kidding. Men want to serve. They find their identity in what they do. And if you ever put down what they do, it's devastating to them. A man wants to protect, provide for his wife and family. He has that desire to protect his wife. And you know, women want that. There was just this week some kind of a survey done. I don't know how much it cost. Most women are attracted to, thankfully, not our looks so much, most women said they're attracted to a man's shoulders. And you go, what? They're looking to a man with broad shoulders. Why? Because there's something inbred into a woman to look to him to protect her. And there's something inside a man to want to protect. And so bigger, stronger, that's what they want that. He wants to do that. But if we get into the destructive cycle, then that is torn away. Let me, it's a simple, quick illustration. This is a real story that the author relays. It wasn't his wife, but he was with this other couple. They were at a friend's home, and they just bought a brand new home. Big, big, expensive place. Something that the man with his wife could not afford. But they wanted to see their friend's new home. So they're going through it. It's got, you know, everything you'd want. It's a beautiful home. And she turns around, and again, she's a good-natured person, but she wasn't thinking and knowing that a man has this deep desire to achieve, provide, and protect. She forgot that. And she turned around in front of everybody else, which made it even worse, and said, "You need to get another job." Boom! You just cut his heart out. You just cut his heart. You said, "You failed me." Now, she probably just went, "Man, you get another job. We get a big house like that." And she probably just forgot about it. It crushed him. You could just see it just boom. So, and again, just those stories from our past. visiting with other pastors, and sometimes if a pastor has a really, really nice house, the next one doesn't, it's because he happened to be able to sell when the market was hot, and he came up with a big chunk of money, could make a nice down payment on a really nice house, and that's the next assignment. So I was visiting this other fellow, and he had a really nice house, and I had a little bitty place. Okay? And I'll tell you, it bothered me for a while. She knew it. It bothered me because I have that desire to provide for my family. And I couldn't not at that level. But he also had another job before he was in the ministry where he made pretty good money. So they had a base. Okay, but I realized, well, be thankful for what God has given you. See, be thankful for it. So I'm just telling you from my experience, I went through that. And my wife, I guess she could have said, well, if you weren't a minister or maybe a better one or whatever, then we could have more money, and then you could build me a bigger house, and then I'd feel loved. And well, guess what cycle that's going to start? No, she didn't do that. She said, you know, she knew it bothered me. It should bother men. Now he has to learn to overlook that and say, wait a minute, I'm providing the best that God has given me, and that's fine. And now I look at somebody who has a beautiful big home. I got, I'm happy for them. I really am. Thank you, God, for blessing them so richly. They work hard for it, and he has that same desire to provide for his family. That's a great, it's a good thing. See? But men have that desire. Don't cut him to death like that. Another time a man lost his job. And a woman seeing this experience through pink eyes, what is she going to do? Pink eye? That's fine, not anyway. What is she going to do? She came and she meant well. She was good natured. She wanted to do what's right. He's lost his job. Remember, he draws his identity from what he does. And he wants to provide for his wife and his children. And he finds identity in that. God put it in him to do that. He's lost his job. He comes home and she's trying to do it from emotion. She says, baby, everything's going to be all right. It really doesn't matter. She can't understand why he sat down in the chair just totally rejected and hurt by what he just said. She just said. And the women go, why? I was emotionally supporting you. But you see, his whole identity has been ripped away. Everything's been ripped away. Who am I? What am I doing? How can I provide for my family? Now, if you've ever lost your job and you know what that's like, guys, when you're in that transition, you feel like, I failed my wife. I failed my kid. You haven't. But you feel that way because there's that inside you that need to provide and protect. Ladies, honor that in your husband. Be very, very careful not to offend that and understand that. Maybe one way for ladies to understand that, if you've ever had a miscarriage, my wife's had a miscarriage, and if I were to come up and say, oh, well, it really doesn't matter. It'll be all right. Do you think that's going to help her? No. Because her identity is her relationships, her family, her children, everything around her. So that wouldn't be the right response. Now, what's the right response? And I know this because my wife has told me. Do I understand it totally? No. You know what she wants? She knows what I'm going to say. And most of you ladies probably want the same thing. If you miscarriage, go through that type of thing. You go over to your wife, you hug her, and you say this and usually no more. Everything's going to be all right. Then shut up. Don't try to fix it. Now, that my wife said that even when we were dating. When I get a little emotional like that, just put your arms around me and say, everything will be all right. So in my 20s, I said, yeah, but how do I know? Shut up. All right? Again, pink and blue glasses. See, no one meant, she didn't mean to be insulting to her husband, although it may appear callous. You need to get another job. Oh, okay, I'm a failure as a husband. That's what he heard. See? Or, well, it'll be all right. And she meant good by it. And he's devastated. See? Maybe she could have gone to him and just said, you know what? God has always blessed us. You've always found good work. God will take care of that for us. And I have total confidence in you that that's going to work out. He's going to go back and look at the door, make sure you got the right address. See? All right. Genesis 2:15, I got to hurry. We don't have anywhere to go. Genesis 2:15. These scriptures are in here for a real purpose, just to help us understand, ladies. Genesis 2:15. Then the Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend it and to keep it. That's his job. That was his job, his identity. That was really his identity. You wonder how much healthier we would all be, especially as men, if that's how we worked, with our hands, working out in the garden, doing those things instead of in an office like most of us do today. But you see that he's made to work. A man is made to work. Physically, we're built differently than a woman. If you don't understand that, I can't help you. Okay, yeah, it's a little joke there. Okay. We are very, very different. A man is created to work. A woman's created to help. To help him. We can't do that if we don't break the cycle. Same chapter, verse 10 now. Moving on to verse 10. Now a river went out of Eden. So you know all these rivers, the garden is taken care of. So this place is watered. It's already been planted. But he still had work to do, and that work was to take care of the land, work it, work its fruits, feed the family off of that. See, he was to do that. And she was to be a helper in that area. And then she would come and it was the helper. All right, let's move on. Men identify themselves with what they do. Fellas, when you just meet somebody, and again, we're not real good at communicating, especially brand new relationships. So I walk up to Matthew and I say, "Hey, Matthew, my name's Tom DeBoer. What is yours? I already know your name." "Okay, what's your name?" "This is Matthew." "Okay, good. I'm Tom DeBoer." What's the next thing out of my mind, out of my mouth? "What do you do?" We don't say, "How's the wife? The kids? Just love what you have on. Your hair, girl, a boy, whatever." I just love, now, I'm not making fun of the ladies, but that, see the difference? We can ask, "What do you do for a living?" "Hey, I do this, I do that." "Good. Now, if you're unemployed at the moment, and somebody says, "What do you do?" And you know he doesn't mean it, he's just another guy. But you go, "Ooh, I'm unemployed. Ooh." Because in his mind, he's saying, "I don't know what I'm about. I don't know what I'm about." And it's a scary feeling inside when he knows his wife and his family are at risk. See, it's in us to want to protect the family. And it's in us to need her respect in that area and that support. So don't nag him. "Why don't you not get a job? Why don't you go do this? Why don't you go do that?" She's trying to say, in order to protect our relationship, "Why don't you go do this?" But that's not how he's hearing it, through those blue hearing aids. Okay? Now, if you know your wife is a good woman of a good nature, you can say she's responding through pink hearing aids and pink eyes, not out of bad intent. Okay? Let's move on. Hierarchy. A man has a hierarchy. Now, there's a hierarchy at work. You have a boss. You're responsible to your boss. You may have people beneath you that's responsible to you. There's a hierarchy. Listen to Ephesians 5. Now, a lot of women in our age don't like this. Oops, too bad. Ephesians 5. There's a hierarchy, and he lists it for us. Ephesians 5. Now, if you have a loving husband who's trying to learn to love you as God has instructed in you, then you say, "I want that kind of husband." See, it's in a woman to want to help the husband. And if she feels cut off from that, she feels like, "No matter what I do, I can't." There's that cycle again. Just as he wants that respect, she wants to feel loved. And if she doesn't feel loved, she's dying. She's just dying inside. And in order to try and stop that bleeding, she just cuts herself off from you, which makes you feel more disrespected, which makes her feel more unloved. See? Here we go. All right. Now, Ephesians 5, let's look at this hierarchy. And men live by hierarchy. And every one of you guys know that. See? Maybe that's why in the military, not everybody likes the military, but you understand there's a hierarchy. There's a structure. And in that structure, there's some order. And I want some order. Let's do it that way. All right. Ephesians 5. I want to get to you at 22. Husbands, submit to your own husbands as unto the Lord, as God has instructed. For the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church. See the structure there? And he is the Savior of the body. And if I'm not going to turn there, but the Father is the head of Christ. There's hierarchy there. But not to abuse. It's to protect. There's a hierarchy there. She is to respect him, and it's built into that. We've already talked about that. You know, I know when our kids were learning to drive, sometimes they prefer to have mom teach them, because I that need to protect. I'll say, slow down, you're going too fast. And she'll say the same thing, but she'll say it in a much gentler way. Why don't you back off on the gas a little bit? 95 miles an hour, Curtis, and the telephone poles will go, you're there at half a mile. That's a little too fast. Me, I'm going to say, slow this thing down now or I'm going to drive. Why? Because you're a cruel, evil, rotten man. No, it's in my core to protect him. When you try to teach your wife, he gave a good example. His wife, she always said, you're so gruff with me sometimes. Do not put your foot on the brake in the ice. You don't have to worry about that down here very much. But if you're in ice and you put your foot on the brake, the car gets out of control. You can't do that. And she used to kind of get hurt by him saying, don't do that. And he said it with force. Why? Now, if you understand, he's made to protect you. Now, he may not go about it the most diplomatic way, but he's made, he's geared, he's wired to protect you. That's what he wants to do. But he has to learn to do it in a kinder way, yes. But she said she was in an ice storm and she could hear his voice say, do not put your foot on the brake. And she came home and thanked him. She says, you saved me today. But I heard that voice. Could he do it a little gentler way and a better way? Yes. Did he mean to be unkind and not? No. It's in him to protect her, you see. Just a simple little illustration. There's the structure there. Okay, we've already covered that. Okay, let's go to A and move on. Authority. There's authority in the family. But authority, if we talk about this, so I'm going to go quickly over this. The authority in the family is to protect everybody. The man is the head. The head means benevolent provider, not dictator. Provider. And the husband is to provide the environment of love and to where she can feel safe to love him, so that he can feel respected. It's all about that. It's not about power. It's about proper offices that God has given us so we can learn to nourish one another. What I'm talking about here, is how do we nourish one another in a relationship? It's not about domination. It isn't trying to dominate anybody. See, what kills most marriages is the desire that one person is right. And they must be right. And if it means the death of the whole family, fine. Now, they don't say that, but that's right. If they must be right. Yeah. Isn't it better to go about things in a correct way and find the right answers than to insist on being right? Now, women can do that. Men can do that. Let's go back to 1 Peter 3:2. We've been there before. 1 Peter 3. I can't read that clock. Oh, those of you who were in, where did we go, Beast? Thank you, Kerrville. Now, I never saw that move before. Mr. Taylor said, I think my watch quit running. So he was overtime by 2 minutes. That's a slick move. Now, I can say I can't see it, so I have no idea. It looks like 6 o'clock, but I know that's not right. Where are we? Oh, and then two guys brought up 2 watches. So they took an average. Okay. Where am I going? Did I say? 1 Peter 3, okay. Verse 1. Finally, my brethren, rejoice in the Lord. For me to write the same things to you is not tedious. But for you, it's safe. You're safe in this. Beware of dogs. These are false teachers who want to have circumcision. That's how frustrated he was with these Jewish folks, his Jewish brethren. He called them dogs. Beware of the evil workers. Beware of mutilation. For we are the circumcision. Well, I'm in the wrong book here. Look, I'm not trying to insult you. What does this got to do with marriage? Well, they have found that. I see. Now, this is they have found that women who have husbands who are circumcised have a much lower rate of cervical cancer. There, see? That's why I read that. Oh, boy. 1 Peter 3, and that is true, by the way. 1 Peter 3, verse 1. Likewise, you wives, be submissive to your own husband. By that, remember, he needs respect, to feel respect. That even as some who do not obey the word, they without a word, but by your actions, may be won by the conduct of their wives. When they observe your chaste conduct, your actions, accompanied by fear of respect. You fear God, you want to obey God, you respect God. And because you do, you respect those instructions. And you love your husband and you want to respect him. And showing that respect will help him to come alive. Stop that cycle. Again, now we'll move on down here. I already read that. Let me just give you a few places where women fail to do this. Just a few things for thought. We've covered this already a little bit. She fails to see he wants respect like he gets at work. One story he relates in the book was quite. She always kind of put him down and kind of made fun of him because he was forgetful and he would do things that a lot of us guys do at home and we're not altogether clued in sometimes. And she'd kind of make fun of him and have these snide little remarks. So one day she just off the cuff called her husband and said, "Hey, I'll just come into work to see how you're doing." "Well, fine." She says, "I'm a little busy, but that'd be fine. Love to have you come over." And he's kind of an office manager kind of thing. And she walked in there and saw, one, that everybody in the office respected him. He was the boss. And he kept things organized and it was working. And he knew everybody. You know, if you're an office organizer, you know how that is. You need to know what everybody's doing and kind of follow up with that. She also, now as a woman, saw that there was an assistant that he had who was a very attractive woman. Now, there wasn't any hanky-panky going on, but what's the first thing a woman thinks? Uh-oh, if I'm not showing love and respect towards my husband, it could make him vulnerable to that. So she said, she realized that she hadn't shown him respect. She went to the car and just cried her eyes out. See, realizing that what she had been doing. Which we saw, he's getting this at work, and I'm not giving it to him at home. So she changed her conduct, and it revolutionized the marriage. Was she all at fault? No. We're not trying to find fault. We're trying to find the areas where we can change what we need to change. Sometimes women get kind of self-righteous and they feel their husbands are dumb. And maybe not. But it gets used to kind of nitpicking at them. You talk down about him in front of others. James 3. Let's go to James 3. Ladies, got to be careful about that. And again, I know I may be misunderstood here, but I'm going to say it anyway. In the small congregations like we have, sometimes, ladies, you say too much about private matters to others that don't need to be said. If you need them, come to me or come to my wife. Sometimes others know too much about your marriage or your childbearing problems. You need to kind of keep that quiet. Sometimes ladies get a little bit too much on that. They know a little too much. Why is that? Because women value relationships. And when they have a stress, they want to talk to somebody about it. Is that bad? No. But you have to be very, very careful. So you have to be very, very careful. There are things that when I counsel with other people, I don't tell my wife. Especially if the people tell me not to, I don't. But other things, she doesn't need to know all that. And it's just not necessary. Sometimes we do if we need to pray about it or so forth. All right. James 3. But be careful, ladies. And again, that's men can do it. So men, if you do it, be careful. Where are we at here? James 3, verse 1. My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. So anybody who stands up here sermon, that verse kind of jumps out at us. There's a stricter judgment for us. For we all stumble in many things. That's why I try to tell you, I hope within proper limits, for examples, things that I may not do right or whatever. If anyone does not stumble in word, well, he's a perfect individual, able to bridle the whole body. I don't know anybody who can do that yet. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us and return their whole body. You know, a huge animal, you can handle just like a little bitty kid can do that. And then ship's kind of the same analogy there. So it's important to be careful with your tongue. Be careful with your tongue. And if you find yourself putting your husband down, one of the worst things you can say is, he has 3 children, I have 4. What an insult. Don't do that. You have a husband, you don't have a 4th child. Or, well, my wife's kind of a silly, you know, woman. That's just as bad. I would phrase men do that to women. Romans 5:12. See how that disrespects the man? I'm not your child. I'm supposed to be your protector and provider. So it starts that cycle, doesn't it? You don't even know you're doing it. Okay, Romans 5 and verse 12. Therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world and death through sin, and this death spread to all men because all sinned, for until the law was in the world, but sin was not imputed, they didn't realize it. And it says, nevertheless, sin reigned from Adam. So sin has been there all this time. Now let's move on down here. I want to just emphasize this. Yeah, we'll move on from there. I asked my wife this today. What's the difference between intuition and insight? And I didn't ask any more than that. And I knew what she was doing. We all kind of laughed as she said it. I said, she's going to say the feeling word somehow. And she said, well, that intuition is when you can sort of feel, or where you didn't use the word, yeah, feel. And I went, I knew it. And then we laughed again. Why? Feeling. Women are about feelings. We have them too, but we don't let them out as much. Probably why we die 5 years younger than the women, because we don't do that. So anyway, intuition. Women have intuition and men have insight. Now, together it's great. Excuse me. When you have a woman has that intuition, she can kind of sense through her emotions and feelings. But a man kind of looks at facts and situations, and now he can sort of see it from one angle, she can see it from another angle. And when you're working together, that's great. But if you're not, then what happens is something that happened. Let's go to Genesis 3:17. Satan knew that, so he pitted the human race against each other at this point. Genesis 3, verse 17. Genesis 3. Now the Adam and Eve have sinned. In verse 17. Then to Adam he, God said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife, you listened to her. She had intuition, but she didn't have insight. He had insight. Adam was not deceived by Satan. She was. He appealed to her emotional side. And Adam said, come on, doing this, eating of this is not going to give you knowledge. But then it appealed to her intellectual, intuitive side. Now Adam, since he's kind of lacking that intuitive aspect, he could just look at it from the more cold, logical aspect. This doesn't make any sense. But you know the first person who got twittered was Adam. He got twitter-pated. He looked at her and said, anything you want. And that's, he knew Satan was lying. She had been deceived. He appealed to her intuition, but his more logical side, he could see this wasn't right, but he got twitter-pated. He got that first Twitter. So some old man said, yeah, last time I got a Twitter, because they didn't know what a Twitter was. Last time I got twittered, I got married 40 years ago. So, a bad joke. Okay. Now, had he said to her, sweetheart, I know this appeals to you, but let me tell you, this doesn't make any sense, and here's why. But that didn't happen. And so from that moment on, there's been the war between intuition and insight, between men and women. And we're striving to understand each other because Satan destroyed it. And it is interesting, at that point when they made that decision, just one sin, but it was a major sin, wasn't it? They had decided they weren't going to obey God. He says, out of the garden. Out. Now go live the way you want to live and let's see if your theory works right. And you might say, well, why didn't God be more merciful and give them another couple chances? Because they made that critical mistake. We reject what we've been taught. Out, he says. Get out of the garden. I can't have that in here. You've decided that I'm not trustworthy. You decided I don't know what I'm doing. Go figure it out. Ooh. All right. So, that intuition there, working together. Let's go here. So, we talked about authority. I is the insight in the word chair. I'm sorry, I didn't tell you that. We're talking about insight is the letter I in the word chair. Let's move on. R is relationship. Very quickly, Genesis 3:16. You want to know basically how the human world works? Read the first four or five verses. Four or five chapters in Genesis. And we've just been repeating it ever since. Genesis 3. I just told you, now I can't find it.
16.
Is that what I said? I wonder where it went. 3:16. Thank you. Yes. It's part of the blessing and cursing here. We'll start verse 15 so we get it all. And I will put hostility between you and the woman. This is talking about Satan and the church, actually. And between your seed and her seed, he shall bruise your head at the prophecy of a Messiah coming. Now, verse 16. To the woman, he says, and I'm talking to the woman, God is saying this, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and conception. So being pregnant and all that was not meant to be the difficult task it is today. In pain you shall bring forth children. So childbirth wasn't meant to be painful at first. Your desire, your stretching out, your longing for shall be for your husband. And every woman knows deep in her heart, she longs, she's reaching out to him. Love me. Protect me. Give me that support that I don't. There's an emptiness in a woman that only he can fill. But he doesn't know that. He doesn't understand, and when that emptiness is not met, she begins to react by approaching him. How come about this? Why don't you this? Why did? And what she's really saying is, I don't feel loved. Make me feel loved. That way I can feel safe in that. She's reaching out to him, and he's going, whoa! Because he doesn't understand. She doesn't understand that the way she's doing it is wrong. Well, I just thought I'd just nag you. You're supposed to love me. Love me this way. Here we go, that cycle again. And we don't realize we're doing that. Anyway, so your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you, or have dominion. He's supposed to have that authority over you. Supposed to be, but in the right way. We've talked about that. And yet, that part of the relationship just never really happened. R for relationship. So a woman is wired for relationship and for love. And a man is wired for respect. Now the last part of the S is for sexuality. And I think I'll limit some of my comments, but I think you should understand that. Proverbs 5:19. Proverbs 5:19. Proverbs 5. Let me read to you what it says here. I'm going to start in verse 18. This is from, again, the contemporary Jewish translation. Again, I don't know if it's any better than any other one. I like how it reads here. You can read in your particular Bible. This is we're starting in verse 18 of chapter 5, Proverbs 5:18. Let your fountain, the wife of your youth, be blessed. Find joy in her. A lovely deer, a graceful fawn, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Always be infatuated with her love. Men are visual. And sometimes young brides don't understand that their husbands can be attracted to another pretty woman. doesn't mean they want to have an affair with them. They're not lusting in that way. But we're visual by nature. And a pretty lady walks by. Hopefully you have a healthy enough relationship to say, that's a pretty lady. Yeah, it is. Or that's a handsome man. Whatever. But in naivete, some of the younger women will think, he will never have eyes for another woman. Sorry. I'm not talking about lust. I'm talking about appreciating beauty. You appreciate beauty, but then you go out. But hey, you married the most beautiful woman in the world. That's your wife. And it helped her to feel that way and be remembered of that. But we are visual by nature. You're not that way as much. You're emotional, right? And that's okay. God made it that way. Okay? My son, remember verse 20? The last part says, be infatuated with her love. Verse 20, my son, why be infatuated with an unknown woman? Why embrace the body of a loose woman? For Adonai, as it says in the Hebrew here, is watching a man's ways. He surveys all his paths. The wicked person's own crimes will trap him. He will be held fast by the ropes of his sin. He will die from lack of discipline. The magnitude of his folly will make him totter and fall. I just like that particular verse in that translation. All right, let's talk a little bit about this part of the relationship. We said that men are visual, and so that's something to keep in mind there. Now, in this area, let's go to 1 Corinthians 7. So we see that there's a biblical principle here, 1 Corinthians 7. Verse 5, do not deprive one another except by consent for a time. It's talked about sexually. Don't deprive each other of that. From I think all of you ladies know this. Men have a desire, a need for physical relief or release. A woman has a desire for an emotional release. Okay? Those are needs. And if you understand that, then you can have that understanding help in the relationship. So don't deprive one another except with consent for a time that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again. Why? So that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. A person's sexuality is very real. And for men, it's a very powerful aspect of their being. I think all women who have been married understand that. If you've not been married, you don't understand that. You know, you just don't quite understand that yet. But what men don't understand is that the woman has a need, but it's more of an emotional need to meet her and emotionally in that way. And we'll talk about that with the men. So depriving a man and violating this principle, except if you say, no, let's fast and pray and just commit ourselves to that for the next few days or whatever. And we won't have any relationships in that, sexual relations at that time. And that's fine. You do that, knowing that that will stop. Unfortunately, though, sometimes a woman will feel unloved, so she won't submit to any sexual activity for 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever. That's not a good deal. Because it can open it up to a man to affairs and that type of thing. At the same token, a woman who's not emotionally fed can fall into the same temptation. Okay? So these are very real things that this cycle business gets us into. He says in here, a dose of repentance beats Viagra any day. So, in other words, you repent, you revive your relationship. I've seen a lot of relationships who do that. When they understand some of these principles, it revives that part of their marriage. And that's an intensely private and personal thing. It's difficult to talk about. But if there's a need for that, we're happy to do that with you. But understand that's a very private part of your life. How do we then break this cycle? And again, I'll be coming back with talking to the men. But ladies, you need to be very, very careful that you don't show disrespect for your husband. And it's hard. It's sometimes very hard when he doesn't understand you and he doesn't understand that you need to feel loved. But remember, even if you have an unbelieving mate, now maybe your mate is unbelievable. You know, I can't believe this guy. But a little joke again, and that's one, but they go over. If he's a decent human being, but he's just a normal human being, he doesn't know that he's dating. How can he not know that? He's a guy. We're not sensitive to those things. And so we have to learn. And at the same token, you don't realize the devastation you put into his life when you don't respect him. And you don't respect him. Again, I'll quit here in just a minute. There are people, one lady I'm thinking of, her husband was dirt poor. I'm talking dirt poor. Their home, they just didn't have anything. But she loved her husband. She was 40 years younger than him. 40 years. She loved that man to the day he died. And their kids know the mama loved daddy. And they love their dad and they love their mama. They take care of their mama now still all the time. And the reason is they knew mama loved daddy. They didn't have two dimes to rub together. But they had that love. People have money and the big fancy homes don't have. It's really beautiful. Because she knew daddy loved her. And he wasn't much of a talker. He was just kind of a quiet man, uneducated, didn't know all that. But he learned a lot of important lessons. So, ladies, the thing we walk away from this here today is, think about the importance that you show respect for your husband. And try the other aspect of it is try to understand he's not trying to not show you love. He doesn't know how. And he's learning that process. Be careful with that. As you strive to show him respect, it might be little things. And I wish I could remember. My wife said something. And again, being a man, I don't remember. But when she said it, it meant a huge amount to me. She said, when there's something, blah, 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 whatever it was. Really impressed me, didn't it? But it did impress me at the time. She says, that's what I admire the most about you. See? And I go, wow, that just made my day. I wish I could remember what it was. But see, again, well, you don't love me because here I did. I said all those things to you. You don't know how hard it was for me to say that about you, Tom. But now you don't even remember what it is because you don't love. Well, if you're going to be that way, see the cycle? But she knows this is just the way I don't remember. But I really appreciate it. I told her that. Now we get home, she'll say it was 2:30, August 14th, 1987. When the sun was over here in the sky and there was a cloud over, she'll remember all those things because she's wired to remember that. Again, I'll conclude just by saying, ladies, emphasize in your own heart and mind, ask God to help you to learn to respect your husband. Go over these things. Guys, don't talk to her about this sermon. Leave her alone. Let her discover that. Okay? So just let her discover that. You're going to come, you're going to start lecturing her because you're going to fix her. You've just made it all worse. Go to work. Do something. Just be quiet. Okay? Let her discover that. And then you'll discover it as she begins to express it in a more mature way. All right. We'll conclude services and have a